We're doing Pirkei Avot with Rabbeinu Yonah. We're up to the fifth chapter, the fifth Mishnah. Asara nisim nasu l'avoteinu bevet hamikdash. 10 miracles were done on behalf of our forefathers in the temple. Lo ipila isha mereach besar hakodesh. No woman miscarried from smelling the holy meat. Our sages say that if a pregnant woman smells some food and develops a big desire for it, her desire can reach a point where it even causes her stomach to start convulsing, to reach a point where it can cause her to lead her into contractions and miscarriage. So I don't know what this is, but I gave a class a few weeks ago and I said the same thing in Kochav Yaakov. I said, you know, in Halacha, this is taken very seriously. It's a siman in Shulchan Aruch. The Gemara in Tractate Yuma, in Masechet Yuma, the Gemara tells us that if a pregnant woman smells of food on Yom Kippur, so then if she says, I must have of that food, so we whisper in her ear and we say, it's Yom Kippur. If she says, never mind, so we move on. If she says, I know, but I need it. The baby is driving me crazy. I need that food. We give it to her. So the reason is that the Talmud understood that that desire can actually bring her on to early labor and cause a miscarriage. And that's in Shulchan Aruch, meaning we view that as halacha. And I said, when I quoted it in Shul a few weeks ago, I said, I don't know what this means. I don't know of things like this in today's world. I don't know modern science being aware of such a thing. And one of the people sent me an article that describes just this, that there are realities like this that modern science is aware of, that a woman can have, what do they call it? A craving, thank you, that can actually bring on labor. So that's a chidush to me. But that's what the Gemara took for granted. And that's what it says over here. It says over here in the Mishnah that even though women would smell the steak burning in the Beit HaMikdash, I'd never arouse the craving within a woman that would cause her to miscarry. And the holy meat never got wormy, even though they didn't have refrigeration. And they would have raw meat sitting around for 2 days sometimes, because the kodshim kalim, the lighter holiness of sacrifices, you're allowed to eat for 2 days. So you'd have meat that would sit around for 2 days, and ordinarily, without refrigeration, that could get wormy by the second day, and it didn't happen in the Beit HaMikdash. Lo ira keri lekohen gadol biyom kippurim. We were always concerned that the Kohen Gadol, he's responsible for doing all the tasks of Yom Kippur. And if he has any mission the night before Yom Kippur, with that he becomes disqualified from doing the tasks of Yom Kippur. So we did a lot of things to try and ensure that he doesn't have any mission, including keeping him up at night. They wouldn't let him sleep that night. And we were careful what diet he ate the day before. Chazal said certain foods are more prone to causing emissions. So Chazal say it never happened. Kohen, what?
The day before, not the week when they took them.
Correct. So Chazal say that it never happened that a Kohen Gadol had an emission on Yom Kippur. Ve'lo nireh zvuv bevet hamitbachaim. They had the place where they chop up the meat. If you guys were ever at a market where they deal with raw meat, so it's usually filled with flies. You see, I don't know if you've ever seen animals being cut up within like 2 minutes after the animal's been opened up, you start seeing flies coming all around the animal. In the Beit HaMikdash, you never saw a fly. You had meat all around, raw meat all around. You never saw a fly, the Mishnah says. Ve'lo nimtza psul. You have a question, Gilad?
When they actually burned the meat, though, did it, I know it emitted smoke. What color was the smoke? And how much was there? Because if you say no flies, well, I'm just kind of curious about that.
I don't know of a source that gives us that description.
So, would it ever make a lot of smoke?
I don't have a reason. Right, but the meat was being burned on the altar. And the meat they were dealing with, cutting it up, wasn't up there. They'd be preparing it. They had a special room. They had a special space where they were cutting up the meat.
Was it far away from the altar? I'm assuming that the smoke...
It wasn't that far away.
Shem or whatever else. Or the, wasn't
I hear
the,
you.
But,
No, it's a good point. But I don't know if you imagine that the altar was like a whole floor above them. It was about 20 feet above them, the altar. So the smoke was way up there. They were down on the ground level, saying the altar was very high. It's a little hard to imagine that because there's smoke up there, a floor above you, down here you won't have flies.
Doesn't. Bet Kari, right? The smoke on the altar.
But what, how does that affect down there?
No, I'm not saying it doesn't. It seems like that there was a lot of smoke.
I would imagine there was smoke. I mean, it says you could see the smoke from far away.
I'm not doubting that there was or wasn't.
I hear you. I was also asking myself, was there a natural way to accomplish this?
No,
I don't know.
I just think that like, okay, so one, if you, there wouldn't be any flies if you're, let's say, if it's, I don't know about outside right now, but if it's just really hot, I don't think general flies will come out.
Go to the shuk. Go to the Arab shuk.
That's very different because they have a big overhead. I'm saying in the summer months.
Go to the Jordan Valley. There are plenty of flies there in the summer.
Yeah, I don't know. Velo nimtza psul. Ba'omer. So we know that on the second day of Pesach, we bring a sacrifice called an Omer. And that sacrifice would permit us to start using the new grains that year. And that sacrifice was done with great detail. They'd harvest and then sift. And then they were careful not to take it outside the walls of Jerusalem and not to leave it overnight. And they never messed up on this. Why that's called a miracle, I don't know. Maybe the Mishnah is alluding to something that the Sadducees gave us a very hard time and it was unique that we could always succeed with the Omer and not have a disqualification. I'm not exactly sure why this is considered a miracle. It sounds like under normal circumstances, you'd expect that every so often things would go wrong in the temple. There would be a disqualification of the Omer. And the fact that it never got disqualified was a miracle. Okay, I don't know. Uvishte alechem. Again, you have a sacrifice on Shavuot, two loaves of bread. And from that point onward, you could bring from the new grains as sacrifices in the temple. And again, you never had a disqualification. It was never left overnight. It was never taken outside of the Beit HaMikdash, outside the Azara. Uvelechem apanim. Now here I could hear that it's a miracle because this is something that happens every week. The other two sacrifices are done once a year. I'd expect that they'd never make a mistake with them. But somehow the Mishnah considers that a miracle. The lechem apanim, that's something that's brought every week. And so there, the Mishnah is saying there was never a disqualifying factor in this bread. No one ever left it overnight beyond its limitations. No one ever took it out of the grounds beyond the limitations. Is this a miracle? The Mishnah says it is. It says this is one of the 10 miracles that happened in the Beit HaMikdash. Why these three are miracles, I don't know. It's a miracle that no one ever took it off grounds. It's a miracle that no one ever left the bread for another week. I don't know. Velo kibu, it could be, again, if this Mishnah was written towards the end of the second Beit HaMikdash, where much of the work was done under fire, literally, sometimes they were being attacked by the Greeks, sometimes being attacked by the Romans, sometimes by their own brethren, sometimes by the Sadducees. We know that the second half of the second Beit HaMikdash was replete with wars, internal strife. So it could be that's the miracle here, that even though you had Kohanim Gdolim competing for the honor and the financial clout that they would gain by being Kohanim Gdolim, and we know that even inside the Beit HaMikdash, you had very bitter rivalries going on. You had a lot of politics to the point where the rabbis just distanced themselves from the Beit HaMikdash. The rabbis removed the court from the Beit HaMikdash. They pulled out the Sanhedrin. You had Kohanim Gdolim conspiring to murder the rabbis. You had Kohanim Gdolim conspiring to kill their own brothers. And these are supposed to be the holiest Jews who are representing everyone else. So when this was going on, you could understand that it was a miracle that you never had a disqualification of these sacrifices. Because if the Beit HaMikdash is being run in such a way, maybe it takes a miracle to keep things running normally, at least in these areas. Maybe. Again, I don't know. The Mishnah in Masechet Yoma tells us that you had Kohanim Gdolim who never learned Chumash. So he's supposed to be the top Kohen Gadol. And as they're preparing him for Yom Kippur, they tell him, Kra beficha, why don't you read the words yourself? Shema shachachta, maybe you forgot what it says in the Torah. O shema lo lamata, the Mishnah says, they tell him, maybe you never learned this parsha. So could you just read it on your own, make sure you understand? That was part of the preparation of a Kohen Gadol in the Second Temple era for Yom Kippur. So this man who's going into the Holy of Holies, he's supposed to be the holiest Jew and he's in charge of what's going on in the Beit HaMikdash, is being asked by the High Court, could you just read the text? Maybe you never read it before. It sort of gives us a very bad picture of what Kohanim Gdolim looked like in the period of the second Beit HaMikdash. And it could be that's why it took a miracle to make sure that these sacrifices were never disqualified. You never had the rain overcoming the fire of the altar. And we'll stop midstream over here to see the Rabbeinu Yonah, because we still got to move on. So we'll learn Rabbeinu Yonah thus far. So we said there were 10 miracles that happened to our forefathers in the Beit HaMikdash. Number one was that a woman never miscarried from the smell of the holy meat. On Mizbeach HaChitzon, the outer altar had a tremendous amount of meat on it. That's the main altar. You have the inner altar, which was a very small, you know, an amah by an amah, and that wasn't used for meat. That was used just for sacrificing the incense, the ktores. So, natan reach ke'en kol tzli. Just like any time you make a barbecue, it makes a lot of smell. Well, this altar had a lot of meat on it. Every day they were burning hundreds, if not thousands of pounds of meat on that altar. So it certainly gave off a tremendous smell of a barbecue. Uvsal kodesh asur b'ana. Now, if she would smell it, it's not like we could tell her, here, lady, have a piece. Don't worry about it. Because that meat was holy, and no one's allowed to eat from it. And Hashem gave a special protection to the women who came to the Beit HaMikdash, that no woman miscarried. No woman stood up there and smelt the barbecue and said, I gotta have a piece. My baby's already coming out if I don't have a piece of that meat. They were all protected, no one miscarried. The Gemara says, what happened if a woman would say, I must have? So it says they would stick a piece of wood inside the gravy, and they'd give her the taste from the gravy, and that would calm her down. And it says over there that they really relied on this miracle that women would not say that. It's because otherwise they'd run into trouble. Every few minutes, a pregnant woman's going to come and say, I got to have some of that meat. And then they're going to have to start running up the altar and bring them holy meat that's biblically prohibited. This over here, they did rely on this miracle. And it says that this worked, that women didn't ask for that meat. Even though they left the holy meat sometimes for 2 days, because that's what the Torah permits, and in the days without refrigeration and in the summer months for sure, it was accepted that stuff would get wormy after such a period. This meat did not get wormy. Even though the Kohen Gadol was always appointed a second in command, there was always a vice president, the second in command. And the Kohen Gadol always knew that if something went wrong with him, so then the vice could take over. And it happened. The Talmud quotes a story that once there was a Kohen Gadol, he was on Yom Kippur doing his work, and a Roman officer called him out. He said, I have to talk to you now. He stopped what he was doing. He didn't have a choice. He went outside to talk to the Roman. And as the Roman was talking to him, some saliva came out of his mouth. He spit on him as he was talking. not intentionally, just by mistake he spit on him. And the rabbis decreed that when a non-Jew spits on a Jew, his saliva defiles the Jew. He has to go to mikvah. So the Kohen Gadol became disqualified. And he had to leave his post in the middle of Yom Kippur, the Talmud says. Because of that conversation, he lost his post. And they were such a good family that his brother was the second in command. And his brother took the post of Kohen Gadol and finished the task of Yom Kippur. And the Talmud asks, it says, his mother was there. And the mother was so proud because she got to see her two sons being Kohen Gadol in one day. And the Gemara asks, what did she do right to merit that? So the Gemara says, she was so careful in her modesty that even in her own home, you never saw her hair uncovered. And so the Gemara says that's why she merited to have two sons being Kohanim Gdolim. So people learn this Gemara and they say, okay, I'm going to ask my wife, even at home, to keep her hair covered, not to let a hair out of head covering. So I always say, are you a Kohen? But seriously, it's a level of piety. You see from that Gemara that even in the days of the Gemara, no one else did it. The Gemara is telling you the exception, not the rule. So if a person's pious in everything else, okay, this is a level of piety. But to drive a person crazy over this, it was the exception in the days of the Gemara as well. Coming back to here, so it happened that a Kohen Gadol was disqualified on Yom Kippur, but it never happened that he was disqualified because he himself had any mission. Now, if this happened, so then how come we always had a second in command? So Rabbeinu Yonah doesn't give the answer I gave. I said you needed to have the backup because sometimes he could get disqualified a different way, because the Gemara gives us an example. Rabbeinu Yonah said we always have the second in command ready because we don't rely on this miracle. I don't know why Rabbeinu Yonah has to say that, because the Gemara says we would prepare a second in command in order to pressure the Kohen Gadol. It was healthy pressure. When he knew that worst comes to worst, this guy's ready. So that would apply a healthy pressure on him to stand up to his task. So Rabbeinu Yonah is saying over here, in this regard, even though there was this miracle, we didn't rely on this miracle. Lo nireh zvu bevet mitbachayim. You never saw a fly in the kitchen where they would cut up the meat. So that was mishum kedusha, because flies are tamei, a dead fly. If you have flies, then you'll also have dead flies, and that would defile the meat. So that's why we had this miracle that you never had flies there. Lo nimtza psul ba'omer. There was never a disqualification of the Omer sacrifice. She'aba min asurim natir Yisrael l'chol chadash. The Omer sacrifice was barley, which permitted us to eat the new grains. Ve'lo nimtza bo psul biyotze mechutz l'chma ve'lo belina. It was never disqualified. No one ever took it out of the walls of Jerusalem by mistake or left it overnight by mistake. It was never disqualified. That's the next miracle. Uvishtei alechem, and the two loaves of bread that ba'in natir l'chim chachadasha min achadash. We brought two loaves of bread as a sacrifice on Shavuot, which would permit us to bring from the new grains as sacrifices in the Beit HaMikdash. And they too were never disqualified. No one ever forgot them overnight, and no one ever took them out of the walls of the city. And the final example we have is the holy bread. Asher yasimu oto shama. There was a special miracle with the lechem apanim, what people call the show bread, that the bread would stay fresh. And when you'd remove it on Shabbat, so even though it was week old bread, it was warm and fresh like the day they set it there. Kmo she'ne'emar, lasum lechem cham biyom ilakecho. That's what the verse indicates. Ve'lo nimtza bo psul lo v'yotze ve'lo belina. And here again, even though all the Kohanim got a piece of this bread, any Kohen who was there, you never had a situation where someone by mistake took it out of the grounds or left it overnight. He says a fascinating thing here. He says they'd eat this bread all week long. That's not clear, because in the Gemara it says that they ate it only on Shabbat. The Gemara says the Kohanim would get it and eat it that Shabbat. It's very hard to understand what Rabbeinu Yonah is saying here. And if What?
They would only eat it on Shabbat.
Yeah.
Because there's they would switch, right? And then the one half would get the one half, and the newcomers would get the other. Right? They would split up the.
But on Shabbat. I think so.
I figured because they said one piece would fill you up, so you know there's enough for the whole week.
Right, but again, like, and finally, lo kibur gshamim esh she'me'al atzei ha'maracha ke'eshtukad la'mezbeach ha'chitzon omed b'chatzar ha'mishkan. So the rains never overcame the fire of the altar, even though it was open. It was an open territory. The mizbeach was outside. When it rained on the mizbeach. And even so, the rain never overcame the fire on the Mizbeach. So we covered half of the miracles that happened in the Beit HaMikdash.
This is the first temple, and both?
It seems that way.